Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
This. What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
All right, Red Sox, Chris Sale getting shut down again. David Price from over the weekend, Mr. Happy. Still some lingering Patriots thoughts from that preseason game and just where they are here with 3 weeks to go until the regular season starts. That's on the table. Those Aaron Hernandez book excerpts that were published today in the Globe, book coming out on Aaron Hernandez by his former attorney. That's on the table. We got some calls on that. J.D. Martinez, whatever you want, as promised, right to the phones. Peter in Dedham on the Sox. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, hi. I want to talk about Chris Sale.
Go ahead.
I'm very worried about him. Two times on a DL scares me. And then Price, which I like Murray. I think Price was a very bad signing. It should have had, Lester. They should have signed Lester over Price.
Okay, we're not going to go all the way back into that. I think everyone would agree with that. On Chris Sale, I don't know how you can't be concerned, and I'm stunned. That's the first caller we've had today of the dozen or so we've taken on the Chris Sale situation. That's the first caller to express concern. Everybody else previously, folks, had said, yeah, they're just resting him. Oh, he's going to be fine. Oh, he's going to be better off for this. If this were the postseason, he wouldn't be on the DL. They're hiding him from the Yankees and the Indians because when they face him, blah, blah, blah. I can't believe how many fans are whistling past the graveyard on this, that he gets shut back down after just one start after coming off the DL.
Well, and this should tell you how far ahead they are. Because even when this happens, people look at it as being part of some grand plan that things have gone so perfectly for them all year long. How could something like this possibly be real? So I look at it, I just think there's no way to argue it anymore. It's real. The second time, they have to put him back on the DL again? Like, what else could it be?
And you know,
some elaborate ruse?
And again, not that it matters, because they're still going to win the division. It's not about these games in the regular season. It's just not about that. But you know he's going to miss 2-3 turns. I mean, what he missed one the last time, right? Or one and a half. I mean, you really...
Basically, yes.
Right? So they're not going to bring him after one and a half this time. They're going to make him miss 3 starts, which they should.
You would think so, right? That they'll lengthen the period he sits to ensure that it doesn't come back.
So again, I'm not worried about those games in the interim. They're going to win the division. That's not what this is about. But if you sit him out 3 turns, if you sit him out, call it just 15 days from now, you're looking at, I don't know, you're looking at September 5th?
Something like that.
6th, 7th, before he comes back. And now you're talking, now he's only got 2 or 3 turns until the postseason starts. And it's like, well, what if it doesn't respond again? Now what?
Exactly. See, that's the issue. And look, honestly, I don't know that he needs more than 2 or 3. I think that'd be fine. And so, they can even probably take it a little past that. They can probably go out to about the 15th of September if they want, max. But then the question is, what's he going to be like when he comes back? I mean, the longer you sit, the more you lose, and the longer it takes to sort of regain a rhythm and all of that. And then there's always that risk, as you said, of what if the arm doesn't come back? Like, what if you just don't heal?
Can they win without him?
No.
Well,
no.
Look, maybe.
No, Max,
but it's
come on.
But it's less likely, right? So, and the reason it's a lot less likely. So I don't want to say emphatically no, because you never know what's going to happen. Hell, if it keeps going this way, they're not going to have to play Houston and the Yankees. They're going to have to face one of them because Oakland's going to win the West, like if it goes that route. So I rule out nothing, but if they lose them, big blow.
I'm sorry. I do rule it out. No shot. With that bullpen being what it is, they have to have a bona fide ace. And even if he's not going to be Madison Baumgartner or that guy that goes multiple times and it's just the workhorse,
what's really strikes fear in your opposition that you're going to go up against in the postseason? Don't give me Porcello as good as he's been here against anyone except the Blue Jays. It's not him either.
I mean, even with, they might not have enough pitching.
That's right.
But without him? Like, I don't see the path.
So the only, I'll tell you, the only path is that Price catches fire. Price catches fire. And do I think that's going to happen? God, no.
So you're relying on David Price.
That's scary.
I'm going to rise like a phoenix.
Ozzy in New Hampshire on Aaron Hernandez. Go ahead, Ozzy.
Hey, how we doing, gentlemen? I just got a quick question. Like, all that I was talking about, he requested a trade out of Boston. And do you think it was more that he was in fear of his life? Or do you think there was more that he wanted to get out of town because he had done enough dirt in this town that he was afraid of the cops catching up to him? Because here's a kid who was walking around like he was alpha dog for how long? Shooting people at school, a double murder in the middle of Boston, then setting up his buddy and murdering. I have doubt that he feared for his life. I think he wanted to get out of town because he was afraid of the cops were going to catch up to him.
Maybe so. All I know is, knowing what the Patriots should have known about his past, they should have known, had to have known, who he was associating with, the drug dealers, the violent guys he was hanging out with, the incident at Florida where he was implicated in it wasn't a double murder. I don't think they died, but a shooting there in Florida. It was a double shooting at Gainesville that he was linked to. All this stuff. And never mind the way he was running around starting at that time in New England, where in 2012, you know, he was acquitted of these charges, but, you know, allegedly gunned two people down on the street in, you know, on Herald Street, right there in the South End in 2012. In 2013, he shoots his friend in the face, Alexander Bradley.
He feared. I read that book from the James Patterson book. He feared from his life from that Bradley. He shot him. The guy didn't die, and he was the one that ultimately testified against him and had all this information that he said in the trial. He thought Bradley was going to be coming after him.
Well, so all I'm saying is, like, the Patriots didn't have a whiff of any of that. So then shame on them for not, you know, being more careful with a guy who was off of most teams' draft boards because of his past. So did they willfully just close their eyes to that? Did they not know, or did they know? Either way, Hernandez comes to Bill, chases him down for a one-on-one meeting, you know, originally schedules one, according to this book, in Foxborough, blows it off, then goes to the combine to meet with Bill. And according to Hernandez's attorney, says that he fears for his life. And Bill's response in this excerpt is basically, no, we're not trading you. We have a lot invested in you. Go talk to our team security guy and find a new place. Like, that right there is that's the meat of the matter to me. And I think, well, I don't know. That's just one I keep an eye on. Like to me, that scene, that meeting there, you know, what was told to Bill? What did he know? Was that the right thing for Bill to say to Hernandez? All of those things.
I just wonder.
That's the piece I'm interested
in. I just wonder if Belichick looked at him and said, this guy's irrational. What the hell is he talking about? Like, because again, think of it. Bradley was in Florida still, right?
I believe so.
Okay, so Bradley's in Florida, but Hernandez wants to be traded from New England. Where to? Like, he's not going to be able to find you? He already found you from Florida. He's going to know wherever you are. Like, his logic is just twisted. And maybe that's how messed up he was, too. Like, he wasn't thinking straight. What? They're going to trade you to Seattle? And you don't think Alexander Bradley's going to know that you're in Seattle? He'll find you there.
Yeah, I just, you know, maybe in hindsight, if you're looking back at the Patriots, you say maybe that was the time. Maybe that was the time to finally, you know, give up on this guy. Because the clouds were circling and you should have seen it. Tim in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, guys. Great show. First time caller. I want to push back a little bit on this idea that the police were acting as fans when they went to go interview Belichick. I've been in, you know, law enforcement for over 20 years and spent a lot of time in detectives. I've done a lot of interviews. So in that situation, Belichick is not a, you know, he's not a suspect in this crime. And no one's saying that Belichick is in the car when Odin Lloyd is killed or anything. They're looking for, my guess is, they're looking for background on Hernandez from Belichick.
So then what's the harm of having it recorded?
There's no harm. And ideally, they would want it recorded. But they don't have any leverage to tell Belichick to record it. Belichick doesn't have to talk to them at all. He's under no obligation to talk to him, especially if he brings in his lawyer. You know, the police are in a precarious position where they're saying, listen, we want to talk to you. So if he says no, and they don't get anything out of him.
I get it. Tim, I'm going to ask you one quick question, but just so people know, in this book excerpt, after the Lloyd murder, Belichick met with police in his office with his attorney present and refused to be recorded, which the police obliged. That made, quote, that made it clear the cops were there as fans, not investigators.
That's a hit piece. That's not correct. I mean, how does he know that? Because the police are going there to try to get insight into Hernandez, maybe background, maybe timelines, maybe find out information. If Belichick says, listen, you know, and from Belichick's position,
Tim, my question to you quickly is: if you're a cop and Bill demand, you know, has his lawyer there and then won't be recorded, does that say anything to you about Bill?
That I would say from my perspective, knowing what I know about Bill, is he's very cognizant of public relations. It doesn't want anything to be misconstrued that he says on a recording.
Okay, I'm just going to drop you there. That was just an interesting detail that Bill had his lawyer there, which again is his right, and I don't even really know if that implicates him in anything. That's not even the right word. I'm trying to pick my words so carefully. I just found it interesting that he had his attorney present and refused to be recorded. And Hernandez's lawyer said that made it clear the cops were there as fans, not investigators. That was just an excerpt that was published today.
I mean, I don't know what all the legalities are either. That one, if I were the police, I'd be embarrassed that detail came out. And that's maybe what Baez is trying to accomplish. I don't doubt that it is a hit piece. It's a one-sided account of the whole thing. The Patriots declined to be interviewed for the Volan story, right? They didn't want anything to do with it either. But I do look at it and say, The police can't do anything legally to talk to Bill Belichick? I mean, I guess because he's not being investigated. I suppose that that's true. It's not like it's a civil suit or something of the like. It is a criminal suit. But I just think it's a bad look, man. It doesn't sound good.
Okay.
And again, whether it's legal or not, it just doesn't sound good.
Who's the Red Sox eighth inning guy right now?
Kind of feels like Brazzers.
I would say take your pick.
Brazzers! Is that really how you pronounce that?
No, it's either Brazier or...
It's Brazier.
Brazier.
It's like...
I go with Jimmy's.
Think of it as Frazier, but with a B.
No.
When you were out, this guy debuted, and I was like, oh, that's that guy from that adult website.
Brazzers. Yeah, I like Brazier.
Of course you do.
Ryan Brazier. Is that your eighth inning guy?
God, I hope not.
Okay, the Chris Sale injury, how it relates to that, how we feel about Brazzers here in the eighth inning, all that right after this.
Felger and Mass.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Most people don't know Ryan Brazier, right? I mean, he's 30. He was a quality prospect with Anaheim. He got hurt, goes to Japan, pitches well, comes back. But if he'd have come into game last night and he'd have had a star name on the back of his jersey, the comments would be, wow, this guy's really good. But because they don't know him very well, that's not the comments you get. But I've seen many guys that are unknown perform very well for you, and big names not necessarily perform very well. He doesn't get rattled.
Brazier. What's your confidence level in Ryan Brazier?
5, if that.
On a scale of 1 to 10 of 5.
Maybe lower.
That's high for you.
It is high for me. But look, I say 5 is like, because again, coin flip. But this is the problem. You have a team that is 88 and 37. Is that what the number is now? I've lost track. Okay. 88 and 37, and you are going to have your season come down to a coin flip in the eighth inning?
Do you realize what a journeyman this guy is?
Yes.
He wasn't even on your 40-man roster. He signed a minor league deal on March 4th. I'm reading a lot of this stuff from a story in The Athletic. He wasn't on your 40-man roster. His only major league experience to being called up this year was 7 games with Anaheim in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
5 effing years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he got hurt. I guess he spent some time in Japan. He's 30 years old, which means he's a 30-year-old rookie?
Basically, yeah.
I mean, won't even next year be his rookie year?
It depends on innings and appearances, but
right.
Possibly.
If he only had 7 appearances with Anaheim in 2013, I don't know how many he's going to get this year, but I don't know. You're talking about like a 31-year-old rookie.
Yeah, I think it used to be 50 innings. I don't know what the standards are anymore, but keep going.
He's 30 years old, last pitched in the major leagues 5 years ago, and it was only 7 games. Wasn't even on your 40-man roster. Now this guy, out of nowhere, he throws like 98, doesn't he?
95, 96, yeah. I mean, he has hit 98, but I don't know if he pitches at that.
Okay, and he comes out, and over the last month and a half, He's been the most reliable guy out of your bullpen. He's allowed just 2 earned runs on 9 hits in 17 innings over 16 appearances. In that stretch, he's walked 5 and struck out 17. So there's a guy. What's his whip, Maz? I know you're big on that stat with him.
His walks per 9 are under 3, yeah.
And he's holding opponents to a 153 average.
Right.
What the hell with this guy?
I don't know. Friday night, he was pretty good. I mean, there was 5-3, I think, at the time. They're trying to hold on to the lead against the Rays. And he comes in, he gives up a single, then had a couple of strikeouts. They had to strike him out, throw him out. Like, he looked pretty good, and he had a good inning plus against the Yankees earlier this month. I mean, look, is he still on the wheel of gutless bums for me? Yeah, but he might be the most trustworthy guy right now.
Okay, but it's just, I mean, 30-year-old rookie coming out of Japan, last pitch in the major leagues 5 years ago. Not even on your 40-man roster. Like, it's just, like, whoa.
But for this used car salesman, Dombrowski, be talking like he's, you know, this was found gold and this is the guy the whole time. Like, stop it.
Well, now this is, now this is being portrayed as, this is one of the reasons he didn't go out and trade for a reliever, because we had Brazier, which is like, please.
Oh, God, please. It's a complete manipulation of the current facts is what it is. There's no way that all along they thought that they were going to be leaning on this guy in the eighth inning of playoff games. There is no way. It's just the most convenient thing for Dombrowski to grab onto at the moment, because the eighth inning has been such a train wreck overall. That's what it is, and that's all it is. Earlier in the year, someone asked about Joe Kelly, and he said, well, we like Joe Kelly. If you look at his numbers from the middle of last year, he's one of the premium relievers in the league. Blah, 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 blah. Over and over and over again. Then you know what happened? Joe Kelly blew up. And he blew up into the thing that we all knew him to be, which is overall a relatively mediocre guy. He's okay. He's not awful. But can you trust him in the eighth inning of a big game? No. So you know what Dombrowski's doing now? Grabbing onto the other guy in his staff or in his bullpen who's pitching well. Like, whoever it is at the moment, that's what Dombrowski will grab onto, which tells me he has no idea how to evaluate or build a bullpen. None. No clue. And the mere fact that you would go through all the guys they have in their bullpen right now without anybody reliable that can throw strikes consistently should tell you that.
So you don't include Brazier?
Nope.
Seems like he's throwing strikes.
Nope. Not yet. The sample's not big enough.
No, but I think there might be comfortability in terms of Cora using him. So while I think what Dombrowski said is a crock, what Cora said after Friday's game, and Jimmy's got the clip here, I thought it showed, okay, maybe there's someone I can now rely on here in a situation like this.
His stuff is good. It's throwing 97, 98, weak contact, swing and misses in the strike zone. He's controlling the running game. So we're very comfortable with him. And he throws strikes. He's ahead of hitter. So today was, we gave him the 7th to 8, and he did a good job.
So, look, I think they're going to try it. I think they're going to take a look. Why not? They don't have anything else. And look, it could work. I'm not going to sit here and predict for you, but I'm just telling you the fact that it's reached this point tells you what they're grasping at.
So even with
just read the profile of him again.
Again, he's
30 years old, journeyman, pitched in Japan, injured, like floating around. I don't know. This is the guy you're going to entrust the winningest team in Red Sox history to? Come on. There's no way this was part of the plan. No way. They're lying. I get insulted when this type of stuff gets peddled. I get insulted because I feel like looking at people and saying, do you really think I'm that stupid? I mean, I know I'm stupid, but that stupid? Really? You expect me to look at it and say that this is where you were headed all along. The only reason you're here is because everything else you've tried didn't work. Fact. End of story. I hope it works too. I'm not rooting against them. Despite what many people want to believe, I am not. But there is no way they leaned on this guy as part of the plan. No freaking way.
Okay, even with this guy emerging, even with Chris Sale getting hurt, I'm still moving a starter out to the bullpen.
Absolutely.
To take those big innings. And when I say starter, I don't mean Drew Pomeranz, and I don't mean Hector Velazquez. I'm talking about one of your better starters, which, I think now is down to Eddie Rodriguez and Eovaldi. One of those two guys, to me, goes to the pen. Because I think, you're not going to do it with David Price with the way he's pitching, Mass, right? I know that's been your guy the whole time, but...
No, if he's pitching like this, you start him.
I mean, okay, so...
All I've said all along is if the gap between Price and everyone else is not significant, then Price goes to the pen. I'll take my chances there. If Price is better than everybody else in the rotation, then you start him.
Okay, I'm still moving Eovaldi or Eddie Rodriguez to the eighth inning. or, you know, late in the bullpen, and hopefully he emerges into that. And I'll take a short-term hit in, you know, I'll start Hector Velasquez and, you know, take a hit in the starting rotation to develop an eighth inning guy, because I don't think you can win a championship without it. Yeah, I don't think you can win a championship without a second arm out there next to Kimbrel. And even Kimbrel, you know, this last month or two has had some question marks. I still think they have to do that. Even with Sale being hurt, I'm still moving a starter out there. And I'm doing it coming up. Like, I'm doing it in September. And I'm getting that guy groomed and ready to be out there and getting all that settled. I'm still doing that.
I mean, isn't it amazing, though, that you can get to August 20th with a team that is on a 115-win pace, basically, and the manager, forget about us, the manager is still auditioning people for bullpen roles.
Didn't Houston do that last year, though?
I don't know if it was this bad. I mean, again, like, I look at it and say, holy crap. Like, so Cora is still trying to figure out his bullpen. Like, and I don't know what Houston's ultimate, what did they win last year? 104 games, 103 games? This team's record is better than that. Like, they're still winning, and I'm not telling you that they're better than the Astros. I'm saying the one-loss record.
Right.
That they have gotten to this point, and they still don't have it sorted out. Houston got off to a ridiculous start last year and then played 500 for a long time. I mean, like 2 or 3 months. This team has been on this ridiculous pace really all year long. And the manager still does not have clear roles in the late innings of the bullpen, late innings of a game. Isn't that unbelievable?
Phones on all of this right after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
Sports Hub headlines.
Red Sox and Cleveland Indians beginning a four-game series and potential playoff preview. Tonight at Fenway Park, it's a battle of 2-15 game winners as the Indians send Corey Kluber to the mound against Rick Porcello in the opener. By the way, Terry Francona, 15-18 against the Red Sox since becoming manager of the Indians, and 6-11 at Fenway Park.
Suck on that, Stu.
Yeah. Where's your manager now, Jimmy?
Blah. Blah. How's he doing in the playoffs? Blah.
Some lineup notes. Red Sox are going to go with Ian Kinsler at second base. Brock Holt at third. Eduardo Nunez is going to be on the bench. Mookie Betts, Andrew Benintendi once again batting leadoff and second, respectively. First pitch is at 7:10. In their first full padded practice this week, Patriots rookie tight end Ryan Izzo absent today. Along with Izzo, Patriots still missing running back Sony Michel, tackle Marcus Cannon, and linebacker Harvey Lange. Running back Rex Burkhead, though, he was back but limited. Patriots play in their third preseason game this Friday night on the road against the Carolina Panthers. Elsewhere today in the NFL, Washington Redskins have signed running back Adrian Peterson. He was last with the Cardinals. They signed him to a one-year deal. Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News reporting that at least two teams have shown interest in trading for Jets quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. And Alabama, fresh off their fifth national championship since 2009 under Nick Saban and second title of the college football playoff era, once again the preseason number one team heading into the year. Headlines are brought to you by Bridgewater State University. Move forward in life. Enroll in a degree program this fall at Bridgewater State University. Attend one of three transfer nights this week. You can learn more at bridgew.edu/CCS. That's bridgew.edu/CCS. I'm Jim Murray from Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Next update, 5 o'clock.
You're listening to Felger and Nash.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh. Love it.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, right to your phones as promised. Colin in Boston on Brazier. Yes, Colin.
Yeah, I just don't understand why you guys care so much about Brazier being in the eighth inning. He's got the lowest whip in the bullpen. I mean, shouldn't that be enough for you guys? I mean, who cares? He was pitching in Japan. Okajima pitched in Japan. He was great in the eighth inning.
Yeah, so, no, but then he came here and pitched a full season and was given a major league contract. How can you compare the two?
I think I would compare the two because Brazier is not just like, you know, he didn't just get discovered in the eighth inning in the last month. He's been pitching in the bullpen for a while now, and he's got the lowest whip. So, yeah, I mean, it took him a while. Well, Alex Cora wasn't the manager of this club for the past 3 years, so he wanted to see how his bullpen arms were doing. There's guys with a lot of good stuff but no sack. So he found a guy who's consistent and just stick with the guy who doesn't put guys on base. That simple. Scoreboard. I don't know what the controversy is here.
Scoreboard. He has 16 appearances in 5 years. 16 appearances in 5 years.
So I was just going to say.
He hasn't pitched in Major League Baseball since 2013. Scoreboard.
Right. So when he says, you know, just stick with someone who's consistent, how do we know this guy's consistent? The body work's too small. It's not the body work's not extensive enough.
And of his 16 appearances, how many of them were real high leverage situations? I'm sure he started out in pure mop-up duty.
Exactly. And again, it's one thing to be able to pitch the sixth, even the seventh, against the Tampa Bay Rays or the Baltimore Orioles or the Toronto Blue Jays. What happens when you stick him on the mound at Yankee Stadium or in Houston? Like, now look, if you want to say, well, we don't know that he's going to fail. You're right, we don't. We don't. So if you want to say that's the best you got, fine. Then that's the best you got. But the fact that you're in this spot is Dombrowski's fault.
Look, bullpen guys come out of the woodwork all the time. It's rare that they come out of the woodwork in August after being in Japan and out of Major League Baseball for 5 years. It's one thing for the Cardinals, who seem to do this routinely, to have these guys out of the minors and they come up in the majors and they're throwing a million miles an hour. Nobody's out of nowhere, as I like to say. But they're system guys that are working their way up and then they emerge and boom. And not many times will they pull them out of Japan at 30 years old after not pitching in Major League Baseball for 5 years. That's a little different. That's coming out of the woodwork on steroids, squared, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, this guy is like literally out of nowhere, pretty much. Yeah.
So, I mean, God bless. But that's really, if that's how you're going to live, man, that is threading the needle. Here's Tony in Stoneham. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I got two important issues to make, one on the Patriots and one on the Red Sox.
Go, quickly.
Let's go to Patriots first. I watched the game the other night, and I'm watching Brady. And I see his stats, 17 out of 26. Plus, Hogan dropped the ball. It was probably a 20-yard completion. And I'm saying, well, what's wrong here? I said, oh, he hasn't got much average per throw. Then I go to his lifetime record. His average was worse lifetime than what it was the other night. So I'm saying to myself, it's too bad this guy did not go to all those practices. Because if he went to all those practices, he might have completed another two or three passes. I mean, Jesus, now let's go to the Red Sox. I love the Red Sox. I think they're going to go all the way. But here's what I'm concerned about. They're going into the toughest part of the schedule this year. They get 19 out of 37 games against the Yankees, Houston, Cleveland, and I forget the last team. The Yankees, on the other hand, only have 12 games against top-notch teams. Now, this could be a big difference. Thank God we're playing the Yankees at the end of the last three games of the year, because it might come down to that.
Oh, I don't think so. It's going to come down to that.
No, it's going to be over by then.
It's 10 games, Tony. It's over. It's over. And the schedule, that if this were a close race, I'd look at this schedule and say, this is really going to tell you something. There's a lot to be determined here. I think the interest and what would have been an entertaining close to the schedule is going to be rendered obsolete by the standings. Like, I think, you know, Oakland has caught Houston, so there's something to play for out there. But the Boston-New York thing is settled. Cleveland is settled.
Yeah, their league's bigger than the Red Sox, I think.
So it's like, you know, even though you're playing Cleveland, it's a playoff preview, both teams basically have nothing to play for.
I mean, yeah, it really all feels useless until the playoffs.
I mean, really. I mean, so even the playoff teams that you're facing basically have nothing to play for. At least New York and Cleveland have. New York is, I think, 7 games clear for their wild card spot. Cleveland is, what,
12 up.
12 up in their division. You're 10 up in yours. So, yeah, it's a playoff preview, but really, if I'm these teams, I'm still resting guys against these teams. I have nothing to prove against these teams.
Hey, the Sox have Houston one more time beginning of next month. That might be somewhat.
Okay, so Houston and Oakland have got something going on.
Yeah.
Got it. Seattle got something going on. Those teams, yes. These other teams, Cleveland doesn't need these games.
You don't
need these games.
No, and to your point, the Yankees are 7.5 up on that second wildcard spot.
Tony, on Tom Brady, he showed me very little the other night. Showed me very little. And yes, I do look at the missed practices over the spring. Because other than throwing screen passes to James White and little dinky passes to Julian Edelman and Chris Hogan, what did he do? I'll answer. Nothing. You say it was 19 of 26? I think of those 19 completions, again, this is just off the top of my head, I think 15 were to White, Hogan, and Edelman. And they were all little drop-offs. Like, what does that show? I mean, other than the touchdown, I don't mean to play, they were all drop-offs. The touchdown was a good play. But what does that show me? He does not need to go to practice to throw screen passes to James White. I would agree with you there. Okay? So, like, I know he can throw to those guys, and he does not need to practice to throw to Julian Edelman. He doesn't. But name one thing that he's got going on with someone other than that. Name one thing he's got going on with a young receiver or a new receiver.
He doesn't.
Zero.
Okay, so look, I'm just playing devil's advocate here a little bit. But when you say he only threw to White, Edelman, Hogan, all little dinky dump, you know, dump offs and screens, isn't that their offense?
It is. It is, primarily. But if you're telling me that that's, I mean, and look, I told you before, it's close. You add Gronkowski to those three, Gronkowski, White, Edelman, Hogan. Is that enough?
If they stay healthy, yes.
It's pretty close, right? If all four are healthy, that's probably enough. Close. Not all four are going to make it. I will make a very risky prediction here, Stu.
I'll wager.
You may want to roll tape. The team may want to consider. Not all four are going to be here at the end of the year. White, Hogan, Edelman, Gronkowski, not all four are going to make it. So you're going to be down to two or three of those guys by the time it's all said and done. They need a little help offensively. A little. And so it just, I don't know, it just doesn't. I thought Brady moved well. I'll give him credit for that. Like, his movement was terrific, and pocket presence and sort of poise and all of that was very good, having not played at all since the Super Bowl. But I'm sorry, it just doesn't do anything for me throwing a little five-yard option route to Julian Edelman. I know he can do that. And the screen passes to James White are a can of corn. Doesn't take anything to do that.
Yeah, particularly when the defense doesn't run after him.
So
take a good look at that play.
Sorry, Tony. I still think he could have used some work in the spring, because maybe he'd be thrown to someone else other than Jules.
I'm telling you, on that screen pass to White, the Philly defense, it looked like Beetle and Fred Tucher were chasing James White into the end zone. It was unbelievable. Well, I think I saw Wallach out there, too.
Long commercial free segment is next. Do not go anywhere.
Every afternoon, Felger and Maz bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hogan and Dorsett to his right. He looked to right. Now he rolls to by. Time for Hogan. Touchdown, Patriots.
You see all these defenders here. Brady sees them. But he also sees this, spacing to the right side. Slides up, and that's just a great one-on-one play, pitch and catch with the quarterback and the receiver. When you have seven to the left, that's basically one-on-one, four-on-four to the right side. It's a great job by the quarterback.
That was a good play. No doubt. I'll grant you that. And he did. He and the passing game looked better than it was being portrayed in some of those preseason reports. And I'm not saying those preseason reports were wrong. I heard a little bit of your Friday show with Perillo, and Perillo said, yeah, it wasn't looking good there at training camp a lot of those days. So maybe that was their best day of the summer yet. Whatever. But that was a good play by Brady. I told you, the bar is incredibly high for him. Incredibly high. And that passing offense. You know, people say it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Of course it's going to be fine. I'm not looking for fine. It needs to be great. It needs to be elite, unless you think this defense is making a major move. And maybe it is. Like, I'm willing to allow that. I like some of those pieces on defense. But the passing offense is going to have to be more than just fine. Danny and Quincy, what do you got for us?
Now that Dan Roach mockingly, and I'm sure in a funny way, went after Tony, does that mean he's going to expect a call or a tweet from Mike from Attleboro after, you know, he went after you, Tony? I mean, you know, it's like death, taxes, and Mike from Attleboro getting on after me, complaining that I liked Orlando Cabrera. I mean, who didn't like Orlando Cabrera? He made 3 errors the first week and never made another one. Or the rest of the season. The guy single-handedly jumps out of the Red Sox. Unbelievable.
All right, Danny, let's not go back in
anyway,
time. What
right.
do you got for us today?
Got to get it in. All right. And on the Red Sox, Tony, who would you have advocated the Red Sox sign in the bullpen, either before the season started or at the trading deadline?
How about anybody that can throw a strike in the eighth or ninth inning?
Zach Britton. We said Zach Britton. Come on.
Okay. And how's that working out for the Yankees so far?
Horrible, right?
Okay. So
wait a minute. Whoa. Danny, hold on. Okay. There were a million guys to get there at that move piece at the deadline. And Jimmy Stewart will vouch for me on this. I said back in May, if the Red Sox go get a bullpen piece, the number one guy at the top of their list should be Kelvin Herrera. Okay? They didn't get him. One by one, they all went off the board. By the time we get to Britton, there have already been like five closers traded.
All right, that's fair. But who did they have to give up to get those guys?
Well, right. So very little.
Okay. So their prospect situation is not the best. So, I mean, that's you got to give. If you want to criticize Dobrowski for that, he inherited a bad farm system, so you can't even criticize him for that. But so far, he's been right on almost every pick he's made this year. So let's hold it out. The bullpen's a very difficult thing to build either before or during the season. And if you want to tell me he should have chosen the different words, like, look it, we've been trying to find our guys in the bullpen the whole season, and we're gonna try Brazier. Fine, but I'll give you that. But we'll see what happens. This is what they have. This is the chips they have. Let's see what happens.
All right, Danny. What else? Quickly
on the Patriots, you see what a pass rush can do.
Yes,
I know it's preseason, Felger, but. You see what a pass rush can do to disrupt the quarterback. Pass defense based on quarterback disruption instead of blaming everything on one guy in the secondary. You understand that?
Yes.
It makes all the difference in the world. As far as Brady's contract goes, Felger, I got on you a little bit because you went down the list and made the case of every reason not to give Brady a long-term deal. And then you got upset that they gave him the deal that they gave him. I actually thought that deal was a very smart move on the part of Belichick to give Tom Brady. And plus, the guy was a troublemaker. He started the whole insurrection in the offseason, and he gave mixed signals about his future with the team. If I was signing the checks, it's exactly what I would have done, and you would have done the same thing if you managed your life the same way.
Nah. Once they traded Garoppolo, I would have gone all in on Brady. Feels like they went halfway. And so, that's just all. I would just fully commit to Brady. I'd make a commitment to him financially, get an extra year or two out of him, and get the next 3-4 years out of Tom Brady. That's what I would do. Right now, it feels like they're going year to year. So the contract, no, I'm not budging on that. What was the previous thing? Oh, the pass rush. That's my lead takeaway from the game. And again, the number of guys, edge guys, big, rangy edge guys that feel like they have some burst, whether it's this Derek Rivers, the Dietrich Wise, the Claiborne, Flowers, who didn't play, but we know he can get after the quarterback. And then this, again, I'm going to unintentionally not remember his name. Keontae Davis?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you got it.
Keontae Davis, like who Bill apparently loves.
Yeah, and he's just been a fill-in for Trey Flowers while he's been out.
This Keontae Davis was not drafted. He was signed as an undrafted free agent last year, but it was after Belichick went and worked him up privately in Tennessee and was going to draft him, and then they found a back injury. So he went undrafted. They signed him as an undrafted guy, sort of redshirted him for a year. And so, but Bill's been coveting this Keontae Davis now for a while, loves him. So between Davis, Flowers, Claiborne, Wise, Rivers, they're all like 6'3", 6'5", 260, 70. Like they're all sort of big, rangy guys. And I think that they've thrown a lot of bodies at that problem. And I'm feeling like a couple are going to stick. And that Juwan Bentley kid, the middle linebacker, feels like that's, they have someone who can run a little bit or, cover guys in the passing game. And I'm borderline encouraged by what I think they might be onto something there.
It was hard not to be after that game. That was the thing that stuck out. I mean, 8 sacks, right? And the biggest play of the game, if that were a real game, the play that changed the game was the strip sack and fumble return.
Right.
10 zip at that point, 17 zip, there you go. So I'm always more interested in the defense because I think ultimately Brady's going to figure it out.
Well, so I was going to say, but figure out to what level? I mean, so if you're saying the Patriots can go from being the first or second best passing attack in the league to the fifth or sixth and still be okay because their defense is better, fine. Then we're on to something. But given the way their defense has played the last, several years, Brady's got to be MVP. And I'm sorry. He's not going to be MVP just throwing to James White. And so they need more out of there. And that's why I'm expecting more out of that. But if the defense is better, maybe I can expect a little less out of Brady. And they net out the same thing. Fine.
Yeah, I just don't think their offense is going to drop out of the top 10 in the league with Tom Brady a quarterback.
Well, so I didn't say 10.
No. I'm telling you that I recognize that the line is somewhere around there. This is what I'm saying is that they'll be in the top 5 or 6. Yeah, that's where I would expect them to be. Yep,
no,
I would.
Previously, they've been 1-2. 1-2-3.
Yeah. But don't you think 5th or 6th is enough if their defense is better?
Yes.
So do I.
If their defense is better.
If they drop more than that, then I'll be worried. I just don't think they will.
Here's Brian in Pennsylvania waiting patiently on those Aaron Hernandez excerpts. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, Mike, I correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you will, that Matt Light made a statement when this all came about. He said he wasn't about what Hernandez was about. He came out and said, and my point is, like, Maz and Murray know when you're just a little bit more dinkish than you usually are. When you work with somebody, you know what kind of guy they are.
Right? So what are you saying?
So I'm saying Belichick knew. They just didn't want to be bothered.
Maybe. I mean, Brian, I think it's a fair second guess. Aaron Hernandez, this is a master of the obvious statement, was bad, bad news. Hang out with bad, bad people. And the team had, Brian, either the team knew or they didn't know, and both are basically a huge miss. They had to have known. They should have known.
They had to have known. You know, he worked with LT. He know, if you're as observant as Belichick is, if we're to believe that he's this mad genius, he knows. He just doesn't want to be bothered.
Okay, so maybe look, if they knew the full breadth of his associations and his past, and they should have, and if they did, and if they got to that point in 2013 that Aaron Hernandez chases Bill down to the combine, has a one-on-one meeting, and says, "I fear for my life. I need to be traded." And Bill says, "Screw you. We just signed you to a big signing bonus. Go talk to our team security guy and get a new apartment." Like, I don't know if that's exactly the response you should be giving there, or I don't know. But I just told you. That, to me, is the crux of the whole thing. If there's anything left in this story, and maybe Lloyd, again, is he suing somebody? Is there a wrongful death suit? Are the Patriots implicated? Like, I feel like that meeting is going to be a big crux of it. You know, what was said to Bill and what did he tell him? And it's sort of alluded to in this book by Hernandez's attorney.
Yeah, and again, just that's a one-sided account of it.
Wicked.
Okay, so that's the only point to me that's important, because, you know, there's no way to know exactly how that conversation with him went, where he said, "Well, no, go talk to the security guy." Or did he say, "Hey, Aaron, calm down. Talk to the security guy. We'll figure it out. Slow down. We're going to keep you. Okay, we've invested a lot in you. We believe in you." And is that how just the attorney presented it? Or was Bill actually pretty calm about it?
So it's really not that bad of a second guess. When the guy turns out to be a mass murderer, I think even the organization would look back and say, that's probably the point where we could have read some tea leaves and just gotten out of this, because the guy was bad news.
But
I bet you the team would do it differently, you know, if that came around again.
Oh, they totally would. I mean, look, we speculated that in part, you know, when that story came out from Reese on Malcolm Butler, that when you sign a player, you sign him to everything that goes with him off the field, too. We started to wonder if maybe this is fallout from Aaron Hernandez. You know, maybe they're a little more careful now when they enter any of these deals. But I think that the short story is, they knew the guy was hanging out with shady people. They knew he was bad news. They were willing to put up with it because the talent was good enough. And they made the wrong choice. And boy, it's not one they'll ever live down.
Hour to go here on a re-entry Monday. Re-entry Monday means everything from the weekend. So the Patriots leftovers from that preseason game on Thursday night, the Red Sox stuff, and the Chris Sale disabled list stint on the board. David Price being bitchy again, just dinkish behavior from David Price that we've got to, and we'll circle back to this hour. Those Aaron Hernandez book excerpts came out. All that stuff with your phone calls right to you after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.